Etius Perik Hey Mishnah Aleph 5:1. Now this Perik, the next five Mishnayos, are going to continue to discuss Machlokes and Mutim Betzilim Beishamah, where Beis Hillel is the Machmir. But this Perik is different than the previous Perik. In the previous Perik, we had a total of 24 different disagreements, all of which were taught Stam, without attribution. Just the Mishnah simply said, here are places where Beis Hillel is strict. In the next Mishnayos, so this Perik, we're going to have a specific Tana, like in the case of our first Mishnah, it's Rabbi Yehuda, who's going to say, in addition to the list of 24 from the previous Perik, there are additional points of dispute between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, where Beis Hillel is the Machmir. The other Tanaim of this Perik disagree with one another, and more than that, they're all in disagreement with the consensus which was expressed in the Stam Mishnayos, the previous Perik, which means that these Mishnayos are going to say where various Tanaim, and according to some of your souls, not arguing exactly, these are all the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, had additional supplemental machloks and they wanted to add to the list. But none of essential will be lahalacha, because they're all going to be a das yachid. So in other words, the lacha will follow the Beis Hillel lechumra in the previous perik. In this perik, the lacha will not be like this Tana, it will be like Beis Hillel, but Beis Hillel is taught elsewhere as Lakula. So many times the lines of this Mishnah actually will be in direct contradiction of how a Mishnah is presented elsewhere in Shas, where Beis Hillel is presented as the Mekel opinion. So these Mishnahs are contrary to that, and therefore not Lahalacha. They're just simply Das Yachid's various individual opinions. Yeah, that's the difference. So now, the first Mishnah here is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Shisha Devarim Mekule Veishame Mechumer Beis Hillel. There are six additional points of dispute where Beis Shammai are lenient and Beis Hillel rule strictly. The first is talking about dam nevelos, the blood that comes from a nevela. So let me just give the background here. This is a tum and tahara issue. A nevela is a corpse of a dead animal, okay? Now, all dead animals are going to be nevelas unless they're a kosher species which received a halachically acceptable shchita, in which case they're not a nevela, they're a shchuta, which means if you shoot a cow in the head, or you shoot a horse in the head, or a pig in the head, the dead carcass is a nevela, and the nevela conveys tumah. The corpse of a nevela conveys tumah, both by maga, direct contact, and masa, bearing its weight, but specifically it's the basar, the flesh of the corpse, which conveys tumah, as opposed to, say, the bones, or the hooves, or the hide. So that means, if you find, like in the desert, a dried out animal skull, you know, this is now white, parched, and there's no flesh attached to it or moisture in it, etc. So it's no flesh attached to it, so then it doesn't convey tumah. The question is, what about the blood? So our mission is going to say that Beis Hillel say that a revius of blood from a nevela also conveys tumah. The idea is that a revius of blood, if it like condenses and congeals, it becomes like a clump, which is very much like flesh, and therefore it should be treated like flesh, also conveying tumah. It's a machlokes rishonim if this is a din d'oraisa d'rabbanan. Let's just go the straightforward way that it's a din d'rabbanan, and therefore Beis Hillel is concerned that, you know, this congealed piece of, you know, of congealed blood, which looks and feels and everything seems like flesh, if you're lenient with it, you can't be lenient on regular nevela flesh as well. Okay, that's the first machlokas here. Into the Mishnah says, dam nevelos, the blood that comes from a corpse of a dead animal. Beis Shammai metarin, Beis Shammai say it's tahor in any amount, just like the other parts, like the hooves and the horns, etc. U Beis Hillel metamin, Beis Hillel say no, it is tamei, they're not at a kazayas, but at a revius, at a kiddush cups amount, if you will, of blood. So that's the first case of the Mishnah. The second case of the Mishnah is talking about beitzas hanevela, the egg inside of a nevela kosher bird. Let's call it a chicken. Okay? So the story is like this. The egg isn't quite the same as an unborn fetus of a animal, of a mammal, say like a calf inside the mother cow. The calf, the mother cow, until the calf is born, it's considered to be a part of the mother cow in every way. And if the mother cow is kosher and gets a proper shechita, that the calf on the inside can be eaten right there. Okay, and if the mother cow is not kosher, then the calf is not kosher either. It's a part of the mother cow, like an organ. The egg is a little different. The egg starts out being, let's just the yolk on the inside, and then the albumin's added, like, you know, the soft stuff on the inside, that's chicken stuff, and it follows the halachic status of the chicken. Okay? But that process is like a 24-hour process, by the end of which the egg is ready to be laid, and it is got a hard shell around the egg, and it looks like an egg, like the egg is you and I know and love. So once it has the hard shell around it, and it looks like another egg, you know, that you'd buy in the market, so the egg has its own halachic status independent of the mother chicken. It's no different than if the egg, you know, you'd taken the egg and shoved down the mother chicken's throat. It's like in the body of the chicken, but it's not part of the chicken. It's something halachically discrete and separate, distinct. So the question is, if the mother chicken is a nevela, that means it was a kosher chicken, but its shechita was unacceptable, the egg you find inside of it, can you eat it? So midah oraisa, for sure, if the egg is unformed, like it's still back in like the ovary, the shechelis, the ovary of the chicken, and it's like hasn't got a shell in it, etc., it's all mushy and gross, then, or just, so then for sure it's part of the chicken, and it's got the same halachic status as the chicken, okay? And for sure, if it's got a hard outer shell, midoraisa, it's for sure like its own independent status, just if it had a much less developed shell. But midorabanan, there's an intermediate period, right, where it's in transition, okay? We're not focused on the intermediate situation, we're talking about the final situation. If the egg looks like any other egg you buy in the marketplace, is there a problem with eating the egg that you get inside a chicken if the chicken is a nevela, wasn't shechted properly? So midoraisa, the answer is going to be no. Midorabanan, Beis Hillel is going to say, yeah, there's a problem. The problem is you might come to make a mistake. If you permit these eggs, you might permit other kinds of eggs, and there's two possible mistakes you can make. The first mistake is if you're permitting eggs from a nevela that are fully, you know, prepared to be laid, you might come to prepare eggs that are in transitional stage and therefore not ready, not kosher if they're considered the same halachic status as the mother, and the mother is not kosher because she is a nevela. So therefore, Beis Hillel will say, no, don't eat eggs that you find inside nevelas, even if they're ready to be laid. The second concern is that if the animal were a treifa, so a treifa is an animal that has some sort of fatal flaw, it's not going to live. It'll die on its own. So if you have you take a gun and you shoot a chicken and it gets a hole in its heart, okay? Then before that chicken dies, you shecht it. Now the animal, even though it got shechita while it was still alive, is not kosher. Not because it's nevela, because it's a treifa. It was damaged in a way that it was going to die. So if an egg develops inside of a chicken that's a treifa, so then the egg is not kosher. Even if it looks like a kosher egg in the end, it's got a hard shell, but when it was under development, it was made of chicken stuff, and the chicken stuff from which it was made was not kosher chicken stuff. It was from a treif chicken, so therefore it's a treif egg. Okay? So Beis Hillel are also concerned that if you would permit eating a nevela egg, meaning an egg that was found inside of a nevela animal, you would also come to permit an egg that was found inside of a treif animal, and that you definitely can't do. And even though a treif animal, so the egg that it lays is usser, b'pashas is usser out of a suffix. You don't know when it became a treifa until afterwards you discover. But you don't know if the egg was developed under those conditions or not, and therefore it's a suffix doraisa, and therefore l'chomer, you have to be strict. Okay, so Beis Hillel is afraid of these two things, and therefore he says eggs that you find inside of a nevela chicken may not be eaten. Beis Sham is not afraid of these things, therefore he says if it's fully developed, it looks like the kind of egg you'd buy in the marketplace, it is permitted to be eaten. If it's a nevela, of course, you'll agree if it comes to being a treifa, you can't eat it because the contents of the chicken egg were not kosher from the outset. And even if you know for a fact that they were kosher, meaning even if hypothetically, you, in the span of 5 minutes, shoot the chicken, then shech the chicken, then find a fully developed egg on the inside. So even though the chicken is a treifa because you shot it first, it got a hole before you shechted it, still, you know the egg was, you know, there before that happened. Even so, this is in Durabanan, that you can't eat eggs out of a treifa, even if you knew for a fact, because the next time you'll be mater a treifa's egg that you didn't know for a fact. Okay, that's the story on the outside. On the inside, it says as follows, Beitza sanavela, the egg found inside of a nevela bird. Im yesh keyotze bah nimkeres bashuk, if this is developed, that it looks like another egg you'd find for sale in the market, muteres, then it's permitted. V'im lav asura, and if not, meaning if it's not yet that developed, then even base, then kadivri base shama, then even base shama to see, agree at that point, you cannot eat it. Midurabanan. Ubisil osr, Basil say no, it's us in all events, eggs that come out of nevelos can't be eaten, period, unless you come to permit an egg that's from a treifa or from an egg that was a nevela that was, you know, underdeveloped. Umodim, everyone agrees, but beitza treifa shiasura, that if you get the egg out of a treifa, then it's forbidden. Mipnei shegedela beisr, because it grew beisr, meaning it grew from a treif chicken, therefore the egg itself, the contents are also treif, and like I described before. Okay, next. Now, you have what's called dam nachris and dam tahara. They're lumped together, but they're really, if there are six points of disagreement, then these are two of the six, okay? So we'll take them in turn. Here's the story here. The various sources of tumah come from living people, like a woman who's a nida, or yoledes, or a zava, or a man who's a zav, or a metzora. All these things only apply to Jewish people. A Gentile woman who happens to be menstruating is not a nida midoraisa. Notwithstanding that, the rabbis decreed that all non-Jews, both men and women, should be tame as if they're like a zav and a zava. Okay? Now, the real zav and zava, the Jewish zav and zava, or yoledes or zav, so they not just are their persons tame, their bodies, but also their ma'ayanot are also tame. A ma'ayanos, that's just an expression, that it means the liquids that gather up inside of them and then come out. So you're talking about things like mucus, phlegm, urine, and so on. These things are also tame as an av hatuma, okay? Similarly, the zav and the zava, the zava and the nida, their uterine blood, the blood itself, which makes them into a nida or makes them into a zava, the blood itself is also an av hatuma. Okay, but the blood of a nida or of a zava is not actually a ma'ayan, it's something else, and it's actually more potent. It's the source of tuma itself, meaning there's a big difference. When it comes to the ma'ayanos, like the urine and the phlegm and the like, the mucus, so that stuff is only conveying tuma while it's moist. When it dries out, it's no longer a source of tuma. So a used tissue from a nida, after it's dried up, isn't a source of tuma anymore. But a used tissue, when it's still moist inside, is a source of tuma, it's an avatuma. Okay? Now, when it comes to uterine blood, blood from the uterus of a nida or a zava, it conveys tuma whether it's still lach, moist, or even if it's yavesh, if it's dried up. So therefore you see that it's different, they're more strict. So therefore some kind of sanitary pad from a woman, if it was dried up, it's still a source of tuma. Okay? So the Mishnah wants to ask the question, well, what about a Gentile woman's blood, uterine blood? So do we treat it the same as a Jewish zava or not? So you'd ask, well, once you're making them into zavos, of course, it should be like all the same halachas should apply. The concern is, and this kind of concern appears in many places throughout Shas in terms of rabbinic enactments regarding Tuma, we don't want people to think that this is a Doraisa situation. We don't want people to think that your typical Gentile woman or menstruating Gentile woman is Tuma on a Doraisa level. She's not. It's just a Rabbanan. And the reason why we want you to make sure you don't mix that up is because if they come into contact with your Truma some way and they convey Tuma to your Truma, your Chala and the like, so then the rules when it comes to truma food, the separation that you set aside for the kohen, if it's tameh, it has to be burned. If it's tahor, it's aser midoraisa to burn it. So if you think it's tameh, but really midoraisa, it's tahor, and you come to burn it, you'll be over the iser midoraisa of not protecting the truma. So therefore, the rabbis always want to have some kind of feature in their rabbinic decree of making something tameh, which screams something's funny here, to keep you aware, to remind you that it's only rabbinically tameh. Okay? So, in the context of our Mishnah, we're going to have Beis Shammai is lenient, and they're going to say that the blood that comes from a Gentile woman, her uterine blood, doesn't convey tuma at all. And that'll be the heker, that'll be the differentiating feature, so you shouldn't realize she's tameh. She should know she's tameh only to Midr Rabbanan. And Beis Hillel will say, why should we be so lenient? Let's treat her uterine blood like any other ma'ayan, like mucus and the like, meaning while it's still moist, it will convey tuma, and just only when it's dried out, it will not convey tuma. Okay? The second case of the Mishnah, like of this too, is the dam tahara shel mitzoras. The mitzoras is a woman who's a mitzora, right? So she's got that tzoras skin thing. A mitzora and mitzoras is a very potent source of tuma. They also convey tuma through their ma'ayanos, okay? So, that said, what about the uterine blood from a mitzoras? So that is not a technically speaking, that's not a Mayan, okay, but it's uterine blood. But there's a time, as we saw twice in the Masecht already, where after 7 days for a boy and 14 days for a girl, the next 33 or 66 days of the woman after she gave birth, her blood, even uterine blood, does not convey tumah, doesn't make her tamei. It's called dam tohor, okay, the dam tahara. So the question is, if you have uterine blood from a metzora who gave birth, which technically would be tahora, do we make it anyways to be tamei because she is a metzora? So Beis Shammai is saying, why would you do that? It's not a mayan, it's uterine blood, and therefore it's tahor, totally. Beis Hillel end up having essentially a limud from a pasuk, which says, no, there's a special rule that the blood that comes from a metzoras is tamei if it's uterine blood and it's dam tahara. So they disagree, okay, according to Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah. That's the outside. Inside it says, Dam Nachris Vadam Tahara Shal Metzoras, these two kinds of blood, the blood of a gentlewoman that came from a uterus, and the Dam Tahara Shal Metzoras, a woman who's a Metzoras who also gave birth 7 or 14 days ago, a boy or girl, and that blood is Tahora. Beishamai Metar, Beishamai say it's still Tahara, there's no rabbinic problem. Obeisil Omen Karuko Kamim Regla, they say no, we treat it like her other Mayanos, like her Ruk is her saliva, Mem and Regleha is her urine. These things are tummy while they're moist, and they will only not be tummy if they dry out. Okay, the next case, the Mishnah number 5, has to do with the consumption of peril shvius, of produce on shvius, on Shemitah year. So you know, every 7 years, the fruit is rendered ownerless, and people can help themselves to the animals and the fruit, and whoever wants can help themselves to the fruit. Remember, the land itself on which the farmer has his trees growing, that's still his private property. And the trees remain his. It's just the fruit itself, which is hefker, and he needs to provide access to the public so they can get the hefker fruit. The question Mishnah wants to answer is it all right to say, you know, express your gratitude and say thank you to the farmer for the delicious oranges you're eating? I mean, now they're hefker, but it's a 10-year-old orange tree. The last 9 years he's been cultivating this orange tree. Now you can tell him, this is delicious, thank you so much. Or can you not do that? Because by doing that, you suggest that the oranges are really his, and they're not. They're hefker. This is Hashem's world, and Hashem's tree and Shemitah reminds you of that, and these are hefker. They're not the farmers at all, those oranges you're eating. Similarly, if you'd say, you know, these oranges are so good, next time you should come to my house, I'll give you some delicious apples. Again, suggest that he's doing you a favor, if you will, by letting you have his oranges when he's not, because they're not his to give. So are you allowed to express gratitude? So Beis Shammai is lenient in our Mishnah, and says, yes, you can. Beis Hillel say, no, you can't. In Maseches Shvius, it switches all the way around. The halacha is like Beis Hillel over there, meaning, yes, you can express gratitude. Okay? The Mishnah says inside, Ochlin peru Shvius betova v'shlo betova. When you consume the produce on the Shemitah year, that's hefker, you can eat it by expressing gratitude or not expressing gratitude. It's your options. But maybe it's better not to express, but you're allowed to express. Kedivre Beis Shammai. O Beis Hillel omrim ein ochlin betova. You may not express gratitude because it is misleading regarding the nature of Shemitah and what Shemitah is trying to teach you. Note, there is a girsa issue here. Many Mishnayos have the word ella. They say, ein ochen ella betova. That would change the meaning 100%, but that's incorrect. So ella belongs out, put in parentheses, whatever the story is, and the proper girsa is, ein ochen betova. You cannot express gratitude. Okay? You should eat it, because it's hefker. It's yours to eat from Hashem. The last case of the mission here is the chemas. This is a tumah issue again. A chemas is like a wineskin. It's made a leather pouch for storing liquid. Okay? Now, the leather pouch can get a hole. If it gets a hole, it's going to leak. If it's going to leak, it can't serve its function of being a wineskin, of being a pouch for water anymore. So, the rule is when it comes to kalim, if they no longer perform the function of which they were created, they lose their susceptibility to tumah. So here you've got the chemas as a perforation, so now it should not be makabel tumah anymore. But what happens if you fix it? Like you kind of, you know, you take it, you can, it's leather. So you, let's say you tie a knot at the bottom of the pouch where the hole is, and now it can hold water again. So is that good enough? Because it now can function, but it's like a temporary fix. So there's going to be two opinions. Either we're going to say that if it's, now, when leather is left that way, so you know, leather kind of like, it like shrinks and hardens. So if you tie it up and like in a knot and you leave it be, it may be that after a time, even if you undid the knot, it still would now hold water again because the leather's kind of like constricted and now the hole has been, you know, sealed up effectively. Okay? So Beis Shammai, who's going to be in this mission, the lenient one. Lenient in this case means we're saying that it is tahor, not makabel tumah. So Beis Shammai, the lenient, will say, listen, unless the hole can unless the chemas, the water skin, can hold water, even if you undo the knot, it's got a knot. You just are, you know, you're basically holding it closed, like as if you're holding with your finger closed or something. There's a temporary fix that doesn't make it fixed. It's broken, and therefore not makabel toma. Beis Hillel, the strict ones say yes, it's makabel toma, even if you would undo the knot and it would leak again, but now there is a knot there and it doesn't leak. So it functions as a chemas, functions as a water skin or wine skin, and therefore, yes, it is makabel toma. That would be the chumra shita of Beis Hillel. Inside the Mishnah says, hachemas, the leather pouch for containing liquid, water skin or wine skin. Beis Shammai omrim tsurura omedes. Beis Shammai, this sentence means, Beis Shammai hold, that if only the seal will stand, if you undo the knot, then it's yes makabel toma because it can function, it's like permanently fixed. Beis Hillel omrim afal pi she'eina tsura. Even if it hasn't like sealed again, if it's temporarily fixed with a knot, that's good enough. It still functions as a kli as it was intended, and therefore, yes, it's makabel tuma, which is the machmir shita. Again, like with all the cases of this mission here, halacha will be like Beis Hillel, but Beis Hillel will be like not like he's presented here, but the other way around, meaning the halacha will be lakula, that it will not be makabel tuma unless it's permanently fixed.